Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. This is Anthony Bryce, the host of 6 Degrees. 6 Degrees is about connecting. We're all connected somehow, some way. You just have to open the dialogue to see where the connection lies. And today, this evening, this morning, we come to you live as we usually do every Monday. Today we're coming to you live at 5 p.m. and we're introducing to you, and we're going to effervesce today with Nico Burney. Nico is the CEO and Chief Strategist of iSoda.com and Compass Intelligence. Nico is a serial entrepreneur. We're going to definitely find out what that is, you all. She's a 10-year leading expert in analyzing segment trends and customer behavior for the telecom, network, and infrastructure industries. As co-owner of Compass Intelligence, a woman-owned market intelligence and consulting company, she is trusted by many of the world's best and high-tech companies for her ability to identify and quantify emerging market opportunities. Nico is a genius, I think, y'all, but I guess we're going to find out here in 2 seconds. Nico launched iSoda.com in May of 2008. iSoda.com is an interactive streaming community where independent film lovers and filmmakers come together. And Nico's resume is pretty long, and I'm not going to sit here and read it. Nico Burney, this is the world on 6 Degrees. Are you there, Nico?
I'm here. Good evening or good morning, wherever you are in the world.
I forgot to mention to the listening audience, while we're talking with Nico on her interview, go to iSoda.com. And what's your other website, Nico?
CompassIntelligence.com.
Just like it sounds?
Just like it sounds, CompassIntelligence.com.
CompassIntelligence.com. Well, I mentioned to the listeners there, Nico, that you're a genius. And the reason why is... The reason why is because anybody who, and if I kept on reading this, y'all, it's going to go all the way there on the bottom. It says, Miss Burney holds a dual BA in economics and mathematics, as well as a master's, MA in mathematical economics from Boston University. And you're calling in from the Netherlands because you reside part-time in Arizona and the Netherlands. So I don't know if this is the Blog Talk Radio first, the first live broadcast from the Netherlands as well.
From overseas.
they've done it from overseas, but I don't know if it's Netherlands.
Oh, cool. Okay, I'm the first expatriate in the Netherlands. Well, I do have to say, I don't know if I can live up to the claim of being a genius, because then I'd be in the league of, Einstein or... some of those, Stephen Hawking, those kinds of guys. But I don't know. I'd like to think I have a little bit of computing power in my brain.
Well, I'd say you have quite a bit of computing power in your brain. Einstein, he said, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. And I think you saw a problem with the internet somewhere, somehow, and your solution to that problem is iSoda. But before we get into iSoda, can you talk to us a little bit and just tell us your background and how you got to where you are from where you were? Where are you from? Who are you? Where are you from? Where are you going?
Okay. Well, I really did grow up in a ghetto, so... It is a typical California, suburb, a poor community called East Palo Alto, California. In 1992, which is the year that I went off to college, East Palo Alto had the highest per capita homicide rate in the country. And it the city used to be like a, you know, basically like a district of Palo Alto, California, which is one of the richest cities in the state. And I believe it was in 85 or 87, East Palo Alto, you know, residents voted to make East Palo Alto an actual city, an independent city with its own tax base. Unfortunately, this was not a good idea because most of the folks that lived there were reasonably poor, low income, a lot of illegal immigrants from Mexico and so on. And so with a lower tax base, the city quickly declined and had a lot of problems with drugs. So, you know, I really saw firsthand as a young lady growing up in this what looked like a pretty, you know, residential community, how drugs can quickly spread and really not only devastate individuals but also devastate an entire community, you know, because of what it does, not only to, you know, those people but what it does to the future for the young people and how people see their society. I was lucky, you know, I happened to be, I think, lucky, and I like to think of myself as blessed. You know, whatever you believe in, I think, you know, my God was looking out for me, and I was able to stay focused on school and, you know, really invest in my brain, you know, that computing power inside of my head, and was able to go to college. I went as far away from East Palo Alto as I could, and I went to Boston University. And I think, you know, that was sort of the beginning of what I'd like to think is, you know, what's going to make me ready for the rest of my life. Growing up as this sort of poor mulatto kid in a pretty multicultural community dealing with drugs. And when I started my first company, you know, Compass Intelligence in 2005, you know, I had been in the consulting business for just about almost a decade, basically working for a large company. And, you know, I learned a lot. I was working for Reed Elsevier, and I learned a ton. It was a great experience. But I think that, you know, like I said, you know, this God that I believe in is waiting for me to be ready to kind of go out on my own. And goodness gracious, when I did, when I did go out on my own, I didn't just start one company, but I just started another one. Because, you know, my whole goal is really to hopefully create businesses that can systematically, you know, help rebuild communities like the one that I grew up in. And, you know, I think, you know, people of color have been, you know, giving back to their old neighborhoods and helping each other for a long time. Unfortunately, the problems that we face in many developing countries, in the United States in particular, is the number of poor people, and particularly poor young people, is much greater than the number of successful people of color. And so we really, I believe, you know, as an economist and as a business person, that, you know, that our country and our society and our community really needs something more systematic. And I think that it can use the web. I think that it can, you know, use, you know, technology, social networking, you know, like these businesses that I've started to bring like-minded people together to not only generate, you know, wealth and opportunities for these poor kids, but to also show them that there is another, you know, another side of the coin.
You know, that's it's interesting.
That was my story in 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful story because, you know, this is 6 degrees. You know, we are all connected. And, you know, I spent time in East Palo Alto in the late 90s.
Are you kidding me?
No, you know, I did. My sister lived there. And I saw the effect, and she was actually one of the city planning people there. And I just saw exactly what you saw, and especially when that Sun Microsystems put up their corporation right there on the eastern or western shore of the bay, and it was as if they just put it was like a wall. You know, right through the city, you know, and just so the people would just not have to look at East Palo Alto as they were traveling towards Sun Microsystems. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
I'm familiar exactly what you're talking about.
So as you were speaking, it just reminded me of just how, you know, how far our nation does have to go, you know, to really to share that dream, you know, because right there in the midst of the Silicon Valley, you know, the opportunities that are there, but you know, it's built right in the poorest section of, you know, California.
You got it. Oracle too. I mean, you know, right in the middle of Silicon Valley is this poor. Now, I mean, East Palo Alto has changed quite a lot since I left, you know, 16 years ago, basically. But it's still, you know, typified by lower income people. And you know, I think for me, what has left a big impression upon me and what drives me to, you know, run my two fast growing, you know, little companies and to, you know, have my bigger, you know, plan and mission is the fact that, you know, I don't think that, you know, like you said, you know, how Sun Microsystems built its headquarters in a way that seemed like to kind of cut off East Palo Alto. You know, I don't really think they did that on purpose. I don't think anybody sat down and said, oh, well, you know, let's cut off these people. But it's the fact that it just doesn't even enter into their equation. You know, it's not something that most people think about. And I don't think most people or even corporations, you know, really consider those things on a systematic basis that they think about to themselves, okay, how am I impacting these communities? And how can I make small changes to my business plans such that it would help, you know, people in those communities? I mean, you know, Sun Microsystems, for example, when I was a kid, you know, when I was in junior high school, even we had a very successful program where they, and I participated in that program, where they actually had summer, like sort of like summer jobs, or more like they were, I guess they were more like sort of like summer camp, I guess you could say, for, you know, for kids in East Palo Alto. And it was, they really believed in it, you know, and Scott McNeely at the time was the youngest CEO in Silicon Valley. And so, you know, I mean, it left, you know, those kinds of programs left an impression upon me, but they're just so few and far between. I hope that if I can become, you know, reasonably successful in the work that I do, that I can maybe create a movement so that other business owners will think about how they can make small changes to impact the lives of kids that need it, you know, kids that were like me.
Well, you know, getting back to the genius theme, you know, Einstein has another quote here that says, God does not care about our mathematical difficulties. He integrates empirically. What does that mean?
Whoa, that you could see that philosophically, you could see that mathematically. You know, what I think that means is, you know, God doesn't solve problems, you know, from the perspective of, oh, this is too difficult, so I'm going to walk away from it. You know, God basically steps back and says, okay, how can I find the variables or the people, and in this case, you know, the people, the places, the energy to, you know, bring these factors, you know, these groups of people together in a way that solves the equation. It's a lot of math here, so if you haven't done integration or you worked with integrals before, then a lot of the, you know, the real the meaning behind that statement is lost, but it basically just says that, you know, God takes things and people and places and puts them together in a way that finds the right combination. You know, that's how I would interpret that. And I totally agree with it. I mean, you know, everybody believes in their own kind of God. You know, some people call that God Jesus and some call it Allah and, you know, whatever. But I think that there is definitely some sort of an energy in our world that brings us all together in some way. And that I think that energy, you know, can really help you find, you know, a peace and a satisfaction if you're open to it. And I try to embed that kind of energy and that kind of, real positive thinking and power into my businesses. And I think that's why they are becoming very successful. You know, we're, you know, Compass Intelligence is a very, very small consulting company. We have less than 10 analysts, which is like minuscule compared to, you know, big companies that we compete with. But, you know, we seem to have a very good place in the market that we work with. We work with AAA clients like AT&T and IBM. You know, we work with companies like that. And I think that you know, my team and I are able to be successful with companies that way because we do bring a positive energy, an honesty, and an integrity to the work that we do. And that, you know, I'd like to believe it is a lot because of the philosophy that I have.
You know, and that's the bottom line. It's honesty and integrity. And it seems as if, you know, Compass Intelligence and iSoda.com and pretty much everything that you do is genuine, Nico. And, you know, when you build anything off the foundation of, you know, principles like, you know, honesty and integrity, you can only, you know, the sky is the limit. You know, you've become very trusted in the industry because of your ability to identify and quantify emerging market opportunities. Now, this ability, I know it has to be part intuitive. Where does it come from?
Yeah, thank you. I think it's, you know, it's very funny. Like, we had dinner guests last night, and I was just talking about this. So, you know, I have this advanced degree in economics and, you know, mathematical economics because I focus more on, you know, the mathematical side of solving systems of equations and things like that. But I can't do basic math. You know, I can't. If you were to say what's 10,000 times 200, I'd really have to think about that. And so the reason why I say that is because, you know, the skill that I have to be able to look at a complex situation like a market is that I can see all those complicated, you know, influencers, the factors, all the different kinds of people that are involved in a market. I can see them, and for me, you know, I can see trends and patterns in their behavior and in their likely behavior and so on. And that's something that is partly intuitive that comes to me. It's like a talent. You know, some people can sing and some people are skinny. I happen to be able to see patterns in complex equations and in, you know, a lot in complex sets of numbers. And it's also partly, you know, training. So over the last decade, I've developed my own sorts of models, and I've done, I can't even tell you how many hundreds or maybe even thousands of studies with different groups of people, from consumers to business people, to partners selling to businesses, you know, different kinds of people and companies. And so I've learned a lot along the way, and I think that I've been able to find the right profession to help me develop this intuitive talent that I have. And that, you know, with that, you know, people are probably scratching their heads going, okay, so you started a consulting company. How on earth did you start an interactive streaming community for independent film? Where's the connection? Well, the connection is in a lot of the work that I do. You know, I'm advising my clients on how best to use the web to engage and to interact with their customers. And in most cases, those customers happen to be other business people. But in the research that I've done and the work that I've done over many, many years now, I've been able to identify what I believe are gaps in the market. And so one of those gaps was the gap that I believe iSoda is filling, and that's this need and demand for professionally made, feature-length, independent film content in a community context. And, you know, I think it's such an exciting space, and there are not actually a lot of companies that are in the space. There are a few, but it is such an exciting space, you know, and as a testament to, you know, what I believe is the right direction, Amazon.com, you know, is actually going down this path too, you know, after, of course, I launched iSoda.com. So I think that is like a feather in my cap to say, yeah, Nico, you're on the right track. And so that's basically, you know, the connection between my two businesses is, you know, the work that I do as a consultant to, you know, understand these trends and identify them and find the right markets and figure out how to laser target them. I use all those same skills in creating and designing iSoda and in using those same skills to help find the right markets and laser targeting specific segments of people for these independent filmmakers. And one just happens to be a little more fun than the other. I won't say which.
Wow. I mean, because it's, you know, just getting back to Einstein, he said it right here. He said, the only real valuable thing is intuition. And, you know, that's, I can see why he said that, you know, because that intuition comes from a deeper reality and a deeper perspective that it can only be tapped through through higher states of consciousness. Speaking of that, why is it that iSoda.com, where did that name come from?
Oh, that's a good one. Thank you. You know, I have been, I have been percolating on, you know, the content for a while. So I registered the domain at the end of 2006, and I think it was December 6th, 2006. It was a day before my mom's birthday. And, you know, I have been percolating on it for a while, and I had actually gone through, you know, a few different iterations of what the concept would be. And I had had the idea of icon because I was actually going to start off focusing on independent musicians and film. So, and the reason I was going to do that is because, you know, I have this hobby of being a jazz singer. So I thought, oh, well, wouldn't that be fun? There are probably, you know, a lot of people that are more serious than I am and more talented than I am that, you know, just need a platform to get some publicity. And so that's kind of, I was thinking, oh, yeah, then they could become an icon and, you know, right. So I was trying to, that's how I got on the I part. But, of course, you know, first of all, there's a copy company called Icon Imaging or something. And, you know, so the domain, anything related to Icon was just not available. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll start with I. And I kind of started to work around it. And this took probably 2 or 3 weeks of, you know, sort of this thought process of, okay, what's, you know, what's this business going to be and how can I find a URL that really resonates. And so during that 2 or 3 week process, I kind of got away from the idea of supporting musicians and focused on film. And so then one day I just sat down and I said, well, you know, what is it about independent film that, you know, is so important? And so I thought, yeah, it's visually refreshing. And so I thought, oh, that's like soda. And actually the refreshing is what it made me think about the CEO of Coca-Cola. I don't think it's the current CEO, but it was maybe one that about 5 or 10 years ago. And he was a fanatic about the Coca-Cola brand. And I remember reading an article about him in the Harvard Business Review, and or maybe it was in the Wall Street Journal, and how he would walk around. He loved to visit, I don't even remember his name, but he loved to visit supermarkets. And I remember in this article, and it left such an impression upon me, that the article pointed out that the CEO was walking around the frozen food section, which, right, you think has nothing to do with Coca-Cola. But he said, oh, we need a Coca-Cola logo here because frozen vegetables are refreshing and healthy, and that's what Coca-Cola is. Right. And mm-hmm. So when I thought about that, I thought, oh, you know, visually refreshing. Ah, Coca-Cola, soda. Oh, eye soda, like eye candy, eye soda. And so that's where the name came from.
That's interesting. You know, great minds think alike, because a friend of mine, I was telling about your venture. He was actually on one of my shows a few months back, David Meiselman. He's into the movies and stuff like you all. And he said that Steven Spielberg had tried to do what you're doing back in the early 90s.
Oh, really?
And yeah, mm-hmm. See, this is, you know, this is how great minds think alike. And Steven Spielberg called it iPop.
Oh, really? That was one of my ideas, iPop.
And think about it, you know, but it didn't succeed because the vision was ahead of the time. The internet
right.
wasn't ready for that. So now the internet is ready for your these visionary genius ideas to manifest into the world and to help create value for so many people. These films that I'm looking at on iSoda.com, and the live listeners, if you want to call in and talk to Nico, it's 646-915-9567. Again, to talk live with Nico Burney is 646-915-9567. these films, these independent films on ISOTA, 1111, A Anonymous, these comedies, they're extremely high quality, very, very high quality. Where do these people come from? I mean, you know, I see that they charge on here as well, but it's, you know, I need to sign up. Shoot, I can't be talking about this stuff and not be signed up myself.
Well, you are. I know you have an account.
I'm about to. Right live, I'm going to sign up as a paid customer.
Oh, all right.
I
want to
watch
one of these films. That's awesome. Well, you have to have a PayPal account. I will warn you. So if you don't have PayPal, it just takes a couple of minutes to sign up for it. But you know, that would be very cool. Where do we find our films? So we found probably half of the films directly from individual filmmakers. So, you know, this is ISOTA is very much a family run business. So I have my mom and my sister and my husband, you know, are very, very much support me in these early stages of the company where I'm trying to keep my, costs pretty low. And so, you know, like I said, I registered the domain in 2006 and I didn't launch the site until, the middle of 2008. So I took quite a lot of time to, you know, let this concept, you know, bake. And I guess you could say at first I percolated it and then I baked it. And then, it took several months to develop the site. So, during that time, I had college students, a couple of college students. My mom and my sister help collect, basically a pretty big database of filmmakers, you know. And we would contact them individually, you know, very personally, and, you know, talk to them about the site even before it launched and, you know, ask them to host a film on the site. The very first filmmaker to host their film on the site was a black woman named Terry Dawn Arnold, and she's also a writer. And so her film, The Two Sisters, was the very first film to be on isota.com. And from there, you know, it just started to kind of develop. We worked with a small distributor that's actually, you know, owned by two filmmakers, Linda Nelson and Michael Madison. The company's called Nelson Madison. And they contributed around 30 films to the site. And they're a great group, and they're fantastic films like 1111 and A Anonymous is also another several others like Preaching to the Perverted and Skid Row, of course, and Shifted. You know, and they're all just really fantastic films. A lot of documentaries, but also some features and documentary type films. And so that's where it started. But right now, where I'm spending a lot of my time and looking to expand, you know, my development team as well as my operational team, you know, actually hiring more staff, we're getting ready for a film festival in December. So the very first virtual film festival will be hosted with the Santa Fe Film Festival. This is their ninth year. It's a very well-respected film festival. It's got about 200 films, features and shorts. And so we're going to be working with them to bring, you know, many of those, if not all of them, online so that their patrons can, you know, see them online. So, you know, because if you've been to a film festival, but they can be pretty hectic. You know, the schedules are usually pretty tight. And when you're showing 200 films in a one-week period, and actually the Santa Fe Film Festival is a little less than a week. So when you're showing that many films, then it's really, you know, each film is screened once. And, you know, it can be pretty complicated for a patron to get around and see all the films that they'd like to see. So we're working with Santa Fe to provide, you know, that kind of convenience as well as community and some special feature content from the event itself. And then, of course, for the folks that can't travel to Santa Fe, but that still would love to see all those, I mean, I'm talking fantastic films, you know, they can just log online and pay a small fee to join the festival virtually. And so that's December, and that's where, you know, a lot of my energy and time investment and planning is focused on getting ready for that. And of course, you know, we'll go from having about 75 films, which is how many we have today, to having hundreds at the end of December. So it's very exciting.
Wow. So besides the Santa Fe Film Festival coming up in December, what other marketing strategies are you going to use to elevate the presence of iSoda.com?
I think the film festivals themselves are going to be a fantastic audience. So right after Santa Fe, so that's December 3rd through 7th. December 7th through 9th is the International Film Festival Summit. And so, you know, iSoda.com is a sponsor. It's an annual get-together of about 400 festival organizers, primarily from the United States, but also many from Europe and around the world. And they converge in Las Vegas. So, Nico, I'll be flying from Santa Fe, going to Las Vegas, and at this event, you know, we'll be debuting, you know, showing these festival organizers the success of the Santa Fe Virtual Film Festival, which we call a Soda Fest, and showing them, you know, the business model behind it, you know, the metrics at that time, you know, how many paid customers, how many patrons have taken part in it, and you know, kind of what we expect to see over the course of the month of December. And, you know, I believe that, you know, our story will be very compelling, that our technology will be, you know, very, very compelling. There is nothing, you know, like it on the web today. You know, there are companies that want to support film festivals online, but, you know, none of them provide anything like what iSoda will be providing at no cost to the festival, of course. And so I think that, you know, our proposition will be incredibly compelling. And as a result, as I go into 2009, I'll have, you know, 10 or 20 or maybe even 100 festival partners to work with. And so I think, you know, that will, you know, definitely be a great means in which to promote the site and, of course, the films in iSoda, because, you know, I think it's something like 10 million people in the United States go to film festivals every year or so. You know, it'll be a big audience. You know, another way that I'll be promoting the site is, of course, working with existing communities. So, you know, given my background and, you know, my personal beliefs, one of the reasons why I'm so excited about independent film in particular is, you know, independent film tends to be about things that, you know, we need to know about. You know, a lot of documentaries and a lot of films made for or by women, films made for or by gays or lesbians, you know, African-Americans, Hispanics, Asians, you know, minority groups and constituencies, like women, you know, women are the majority, but unfortunately, you know, a lot of the kind of big budget films that are made don't always portray women in an honest or positive way. And I think independent filmmakers tend to be more real and, you know, be more challenging about, you know, these sort of social stereotypes and really present a different image of what is quote-unquote normal. And I think that's so important for people to be able to experience that kind of honesty, you know, like we talked about, and to experience these different ideas of what, you know, what's the visual story of our culture and of our lives. And so, you know, a big part of my strategy is not to just create a hub, you know, to get everyone to go to iSoda.com, but actually to plug into the places where these constituencies and these group, you know, minorities and these communities of people that already, you know, have community with each other to go and plug into there. So, you know, partners like CodeZ.com, which is a site for African American art, there are a number of sites that are about, you know, films made for and by women that, you know, we're trying to work with. And, of course, sites focused on gays and lesbians, people that love documentaries. I mean, there's so many audiences. You know, I could make a whole list, hundreds and hundreds of different types of people and types of audiences. And, you know, I really, in the 10 years that I have been studying the development of the internet, and the last 10 years have been the most dramatic, you know, in its evolution. You know, in those 10 years, you know, that's basically what has been the big finding about the web, that it's all about you, right? It's all about me and you and us as individuals. But more importantly, it's about us as individuals in the context of the community or communities that we belong to. And so embracing that idea, you know, I think the next step of the web is not just creating social networks where you can join and you become a member, but it's actually where, you know, you can become a part of
you know, an individual group, you know, a unique community that, and you interact within that unique community, and that all the media and the content and the, you know, applications and the tools and all the things that are relevant to you as a member of that community are brought to you.
Right. It almost becomes something living and breathing in and of itself. And that's the beauty. That's the beauty of what you're doing. It's kind of like Blog Talk Radio, you know. I started back when they were in beta testing, and it was, you know, pretty much. I remember Alan Levy, he's the CEO. I don't know if you know the story of how it started, but he started it because he was, his father got ill and with a heart attack, and he had a regular little blog that you write with your hands, you know. And while he was typing the blog out, he had this insight, and man, I wonder if these blogs could talk. And of course, they're, you know, he had the ways and the means to make Blog Talk Radio a reality because of his background and whatnot. So, but it did. I mean, if you think about that, it, you know, the motivation behind the creation of Blog Talk Radio was love and compassion, and based upon a foundation like that, look at where he's come. You know, it's one of the largest social internet radio networking site in the world. So there you have it. So, you know, I'm just making those comparisons, you know, to you, you know, because I can sense those, you know. I can see that you have a motivation that's based off of something greater than yourself, and it's based off of integrity, and it's based off of a desire to bring people together for purposes greater than themselves. So it can only succeed with the right team and the right leaders at the helm.
Thank
I'm looking
you.
At this stand-up.
I hope so.
No, yeah, you know, your success is in your DNA. I'm looking at these this Santa Fe Film Festival website, and they've got a big old UFO exhibit. That's the one in New Mexico. I was thinking Santa Fe, like California, but that's in New Mexico, isn't it?
It's in New Mexico, yeah. Yeah, it's a great one. And, you know, they're, like I said, they're going into their ninth year. You know, they're really known for documentaries and some experimental films. But, I mean, it's really a festival, and they kind of go across all the genres. You know, some festivals focus on one genre in particular, where Santa Fe is really all about, you know, the art. And so they go across many genres. And yeah, we're very – I'm just really very excited about working with them. I've already started to, you know, come in contact with some of the filmmakers that have been accepted. And so, you know, I'm just really excited about working with them and the possibilities that it brings and you know, really exploring this concept of creating a festival online to complement an existing festival. You know, I think the idea of an online event is not new. You know, when I was working for Reed Elsevier, you know, one of the things that they did in, I think it was 2000, was host a virtual trade show. And so it was sort of this 3D kind of environment. And, you know, they considered it to be very successful. You know, a few thousand people showed up and you know, with sponsors and everything. And so it was, you know, it was a really big thing, you know, this sort of virtual trade show. But the idea of not trying to replace something, you know, I think often, you know, new companies, new internet startups like mine, you know, isoda.com, one of the things that, you know, the CEOs and the leadership of those companies try to do is to replace something that exists in the real world. In their enthusiasm, they think, oh, you know, doing it online is better. And so it's easier and it's cheaper, and so that's why you should do it online and you don't need to do it offline anymore. And that's actually not my philosophy. I think that you can never replace the experience of being at a film festival and being there live, or you also can't replace the experience of going to the theater and watching a movie on the big screen with the, you know, full, you know, Dolby Hi-Fi surround sound and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the online experience is not meant to replace it. It's meant to complement it, you know, and that's my philosophy, you know, with the Santa Fe Soda Fest, is actually to complement that, you know, fantastic festival experience and to hopefully take some of the stress and complexity out of it. You know, if you want to see all 200 films, then you're really going to need to manage your time very well.
And, you know, now that we've got the Soda Fest, you really can sort of cherry pick, enjoy all of the non-film related activities at the event, you know, take your time, do what you want, because you can always go online and see those films later. And, you know, that's really my philosophy, is to provide festival organizers with a new option for their patrons, to provide festival goers with convenience and an opportunity to see that content again and in a different context, to, you know, to enjoy it again and with more convenience. And then, of course, to provide the folks that, that can't make it to film festivals like me, because I'm a workaholic insomniac, you know, to provide folks like me an opportunity to be able to at least enjoy the work. And I think there are probably a lot of folks like me, you know, that can't even get it to go, you know.
You know, I want to go. I want to go back a little bit on your background, Nico. Your research is used by the Department of Commerce, the Federal FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and the Small Business Administration for policy development and industry review. What is some of the research that you've provided that has been used at that level?
Yeah, a lot of this was in the, you know, at the kind of that I wanted to sound so long ago, at the turn of the century, as we were making the transition from the 90s to the 2000s. And, you know, of course, at that time, the Department of Commerce, the DOC, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, and the Small Business Administration were trying to understand what kind of an impact the internet was going to have on business. And so, you know, a big area of my focus is business, how businesses use technology to grow, to innovate, to become more efficient, to evolve. And so at that time, there actually weren't a lot of researchers that focused on business, particularly small businesses. And so, and I also had the luxury of getting a lot of press, because I focused in on a lot of internet startups that were trying to enable businesses using the internet. And you know, so that's why I really came into contact with those, you know, government departments. To be honest, I don't work with them on a regular basis. I never did. But I do still, you know, it is still something we do provide insight and information to the government on a, you know, periodic basis.
Well, there's a, you know, Einstein, you know, you and him have a lot in common, being the geniuses that you both are.
You are too flattering.
Well, it is what it is. I mean, you know, you're so smart. You don't know what to do with yourself. But Einstein said, a person starts to live when he can live outside himself. A person starts to live when he can live outside himself. How does the technology and the opportunities that you bring to the world help someone to live outside themselves?
Wow. Well, you know, I think the concept of iSoda allows people to express themselves through film. You know, that's the first step. And, you know, to not just be able to enjoy these films, but to actually be part of a community and to enjoy the film in the context of a community, and hopefully become moved by what these films are about. So, for example, one of the films that we have on the site is called Skid Row, and this is a great example of living outside of yourself, where, you know, one of the members of the Fugees, Pras Michael, decided to, you know, of course, he lives in the Los Angeles area, and Los Angeles is, you know, such a interesting area because of its dichotomies. You know, on the one hand, it's got something like the highest population of millionaires in the United States, something like 40,000 or 50,000 millionaires, you know, live in Los Angeles County. And right over on the other side, you know, completely opposite and completely on the other extreme, it also has the largest population of homeless people in the country. So it's something like 80 million, or I think the latest statistics is closer to 90,000 homeless people. So while you've got some of the biggest group of rich people, you've also got the biggest group of very, very poor people. And they all live in this, you know, very, I think it's five block area called 5 square blocks called Skid Row. And, you know, you can be homeless in Skid Row. You know, you can set up a tent on the sidewalk and sleep there over the night. It's not illegal like it is in much of the rest of the city. And so what Pros Michael did is he went 9 days. He lived in Skid Row as a homeless man for 9 days. And the film basically follows his struggle and how to survive that way. And it was just 9 days, you know, and at the end of the 9 days, you know, it really had changed his perspective and his life and really, you know, made him say to himself, gosh, you know, we have to do something about this. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do with ISOTA is, of course, you know, as the site grows and becomes more popular, you know, I hope that people will watch this film because we're going to donate 100% of our proceeds on the film to homeless organizations in the United States. And the filmmakers have agreed to donate half. So, you know, most of the money that, you know, go to this film from ISOTA.com will be donated to homeless shelters. So that's just, you know, sort of a tactical thing. What I think is the part, you know, that kind of goes to that quote from Einstein is when you watch this film, you can't help but be moved by it because it's so honest and it's so real, you know. It's not some, like, kind of made-for-TV movie, and it's not sort of the dramatized, quote-unquote, reality TV that we often see. It's just real, you know, this guy basically being homeless and coming across, like, real homeless people and hearing their story and their struggle. And, you know, I don't think anybody, any, you know, regular person can watch such a film and not live outside of yourself for at least the duration of the film and ask yourself, how can this happen in this country? And what can I do to help? And, you know, and I hope that, you know, a lot of the films on ISOTA that way, you know, where you watch them and it makes you really think about your world and where you fit into it. It makes you think about yourself. And, you know, I hope that, you know, as ISOTA grows and as it becomes more successful, that I can use the success of that business to create other business that will help people in other ways and, you know, maybe providing training or jobs.
You know, I've let you talk more than almost any guest I've ever had on this show.
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm such a chatterbox.
It's okay. You are. And, you know, I decided to just let you talk, you know, because you're just so full of so much wisdom. And when you rewind the show, normally I find that, you know, I have to listen to these shows 2 and 3 times to really digest them. There's a, you know, you hit the nail right on the head, Nico, because that's the exact movie that I guess you could say resonated with or tuned into with Skid Row. And actually, while you were talking, I ran out to my car to get my wallet so I can get up on this on this thing. You know, shoot, I wasn't sure if I was going to go, you know, all the way in yet because, you know, I was like, well, let me do the show first. And then I was like, well, I need to be a member before I even do the show so I can actually, you know, be, you know, genuine while I'm talking to her. But, you know, that's – I just really, really want to see that movie Skid Row, bottom line. So there's another quote from Einstein that says, anyone – who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new. How does that relate to your ventures in life?
Wow, that is like my story. you know, I think, you know, especially in today's world where, you know, the internet plays such an important role in it, you know, one of the things that I tend to deal with my clients is they, you know, they're big companies, they've got big, you know, very expensive, prestigious brands. And so, of course, they want to do everything perfectly. But, you know, where the world has come and where the internet is it is very much an iterative art more so than it is a science. And, you know, basically what we see, you know, when we see these, you know, really great, you know, popular success stories like YouTube or MySpace or any of those companies is that they tend to take risks, you know, they just go out there and try something totally new, even when it doesn't work, and they learn from the failure of the technology or the experience or whatever it is that they tried, and they improve, and then they keep going. I think a great example of that is Twitter, you know, and until it got funding, you know, from some big names,
you know, Twitter was sort of this kind of project. And, you know, it was the only site on the internet that people would be excited if it was actually working. and that was kind of one of the, you know, the things that, you know, that really struck me about it when I first learned about it is that, you know, people, it was just, you know, it had no business model and no economic background, but it just was a tool that people liked to use. And even though it wasn't, you know, perfect in terms of being reliable or a robust or anything, people still used it because it played a role in their life. And I think, you know, learning from the failures of it, you know, the technical failures and maybe the user experience failures and everything, the folks behind Twitter are able to refine it and will one day be able to turn that into a, you know, I believe a very successful profit generating business. But, you know, companies that don't go around that path, that try to think through, you know, the entire process up front and make it perfect, so quote unquote, will very likely miss a lot of the innovation and the opportunity that you experience by just trying something. And I know that that's very opposite. My husband is you know, he has a very successful company, and he made his bones in quality assurance in the biotech industry. And so, of course, you don't want your, you know, medicine manufacturer to just try stuff. So I completely understand why it drives him crazy, you know, with my approach, which is, okay, you know, we'll just try it and see how it works and kind of go from there. But, you know, in the internet world, you know, that's the approach that I think works best is you've got to, of course, do your homework, think it through, do some research, and then try it. That's the only way that you'll see if it works and how people respond to it, and then evolve. So I think, you know, that quote from Einstein is really about evolution. You know, it's about, you know, being able to put yourself into a situation where your business and your ideas and your technology can evolve.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you learn from each and every one of your mistakes, and I still
oh, man. And I have made plenty. You know, I, like I said, you know, people call me an expert, and I've been doing this for a while, but, you know, there's still things that, you know, there's just not enough time or not enough money. You know, I've funded this company on my own. I've been, you know, lucky enough to have, you know, had enough assets and everything to be able to put as much money into it as I have, and I've put quite a lot of money. And, you know, the reason why I've done that, you know, because I know lots of venture capitalists and finance people, you know, I mean, being in the industry that I'm in, I could easily find backers. But that's not my interest. My interest is not to take the company public and sell it for a couple of billion dollars in a couple of years. My interest is actually to create an enterprise that will give back to the community in a systematic, commercially driven way, and to use it as a platform and hopefully a template to other potential business owners and even large companies to say that you can create a profit-generating business that also has a social objective, you know, that the goal of the business is not just to make money, but the goal of the business is actually to play a positive role in the society and the community that you're in. And I think that now is the best time ever to try and create such a movement, you know, when we look at what's happening in our financial markets and what's going on Wall Street, and we hear the stories about how AIG executives have gone on $500,000 retreats or whatever after the government has given them $38 billion. So I think that now, if ever, is the time to for business owners and entrepreneurs like myself to say, okay, let me think about how I run my business, and that greed cannot be the only motivation for it. I think the days of greed are hopefully over.
You know, that's so true, and that's why you're poised to be so very, very successful, because the world needs platforms like iSoda. The world needs platforms like Blog Talk Radio that bring people of like minds together to create value that resonates across space and time. I feel that you know you're just like a little white blood corpuscle in the big body of Earth that's just going to do so much good with iSoda.com.
I hope so. Thank you. That was the best description anyone has given me. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. This, I mean, you know, I don't know where this stuff comes from. Science is a wonderful thing if one does not have to earn one's living at it. That's another quote from Einstein.
You're a big Einstein fan, aren't you?
Well, I didn't know what to talk about today, you know, so I just said, let me do something with you because you're so smart. So I think you resonate well with him.
Thank you. Well, you know, my favorite Einstein story is, and see, I'm probably not a genius, or I don't want to call myself a genius, but I do at least share some of the zany qualities of a very well-known genius, and that's Einstein. So Einstein was famous for forgetting his address. So, you know, of course, he taught at Princeton, and there's this story that's gone all around, and if some people say that there's some details that aren't right about it, but basically what the story is, you know, sort of like an old wives' tale, is that Einstein would often get lost, and he lives in the town of Princeton, and so he'd call information, and he'd say, hi, this is Albert Einstein, and I need to know what my address is, because he'd forget, you know, and the other fact about him is that he wore exactly the same outfit all the time except for special occasions. Mm-hmm. So he had, you know, five of the same shirts and five of the same ties and five of the same shoes and pants and everything. And when asked, you know, why did he do that, it was because he didn't want to invest any brain power or any computing power in his brain to choosing out outfits. So I definitely could not be a genius because I spend too much time with just shoes alone.
Well, we all utilize
we
all utilize our brains in different ways. We only have 5 minutes or less left on the show, and I do appreciate you coming on to 6 Degrees and sharing your life with us, Nico. I really do. I appreciate you. What do you see yourself 5 months from now? Not 5 months from now. This time next year, where do you see yourself?
Very cool. Great question. So this time next year, you know, I hope we're approaching 1 million members on isoda.com. I hope that I will be in a position to launch a subsidiary that I'd like to call Change Media. You know, my big goal is to create a retraining program for welfare mothers and low undereducated Americans. And, you know, these people tend to, you know, be left behind, you know, this sort of digital divide, folks that use the internet and folks that don't. And so, you know, I've been spending a lot of my time dreaming up what the technology platform would look like and what the business model would be and what's the structure of the company and everything to, you know, commercially retrain, you know, welfare parents and, you know, undereducated Americans so that they can become, you know, web programmers. And I think that there is a market for professionally made websites that are of low cost. And, you know, they'd be for people like hairdressers and families and things like that. And so hopefully this time next year, I'll be just launching that business. And, you know, an interesting aspect of it, it won't just be, you know, retraining program that might provide jobs, but it'll also change their lives in that it'll provide them with a community. It'll provide them with housing if they need it. It'll provide them with educational opportunities for their children and other, you know, societal foundational points that they'll need to prosper in this new world. And so that's what I hope I'll be doing at this time next year. I'll be just launching it. Maybe I'll be on Oprah. So maybe we'll be on Oprah. So my next appearance in the mainstream media will be from, you know, going from Anthony Bryce to Oprah Winfrey. So maybe I'll be on something like that. But, you know, I'd be just as happy to just be doing my thing. That would be just as good for me.
That would be a huge leap for you because I, you know, mine is one person at a time and Oprah does millions of people at a time. Thank you again, Nico, for coming on. Basically, you know what Einstein had to say about the future. He said, I never think of the future. It comes soon enough.
Yeah. Well, I've got a good Einstein quote. He says, science is good, but imagination is better. So I'll leave you with that. And, you know, it's all about dreaming up, you know, your future, living outside of yourself and living your dreams, right?
That's right. Well, thank you again. I'm going to end, if you don't mind, with Change Is Gonna Come. It's a wonderful wonderful song by a guest that I had on the show earlier, a few years back, a few episodes back. It's I think it'll be a nice little end for you for your show as well. Any last second, anything for the live listeners out there?
Yeah, for those live listeners out there, just, you know, live your dreams and, you know, try to be the person that you really want to be. Don't hold yourself back with conventional ideas. Just go for it.
And you could please join iSoda.com, everyone. iSoda.com.
Yes.
Go in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, EYESODA.com.
iSoda.com. Check it out. And I'm actually, right after the show, I'm going to log on, do my PayPal thing. Actually, while you were talking, I went on ahead and sent myself an email, and you'll be seeing that message from me here very shortly. Thank you again.
Yes, you
live
are a rock star, Anthony. Yeah, thank you, and many good wishes to you.
Oh, I can't wait! I can't wait to see you in one of these existences.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. You too. Bye.
Sometimes I go to my brothers and I say to them, "Oh brother, won't you help me please?" But they wind up knocking me, oh, back down on my knees. And I can carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Whoa, yes it will. I know you had a hard time. Whoa, he left you trying to raise the children all alone. Father, you thought grass was greener on the other side. Go back and tell your children that you were wrong. When I go to the malls and I go downtown, I hear them tell the children, don't hang around. It's been a long time.
a long time coming, but I know.
And thank you again. Next week on 6 Degrees, we have actually Kelly Ellis. She's a celebrity interior designer. She's also one of the personalities and cast members of the Compass movie. You can find out more information at www.thecompass.tv. Next week, we 6 Degrees goes inside with Kelly Ellis. She's a celebrity interior designer. You'll see her on many shows like Takeover Your Makeover and other shows. I don't watch HGTV, sorry, y'all. But Kelly is awesome, and she entertains millions of people every week. So talk to you all then. Bye-bye.